NBA postseason has been really interesting of late. Joining us now to talk about that is a senior NBA writer for The Athletic. It goes without saying he is a good friend of the program, too. He is Sam Amick. My man, Sam, what's going on? How are you?
Romy, good morning, my friend. Doing great. Thanks for having me.
Sam, listen, you have covered sports for a long, long time. You know that one of the things that athletes hate talking about is injuries. So I am not going to start the conversation by asking you about the fact that you are playing through pain right now. I will double back and get to it later on. Let me start with the Clippers. Sure. They've won two straight. They are headed back to Salt Lake. How have the Clippers looked to you in tying up this series, Sam?
Wonderful and confusing all at once. I actually spent part of my morning, having those kinds of conversations about that team and just the roller coaster ride they've been on. They didn't show this kind of play and spirit for a lot of the regular season, and so you don't know what you think of them. And then they get down 2-0 to Dallas, and you think they're cooked and this whole thing's going to fall apart. They show that grit, they fight back, they win that series, and then lo and behold, you're down 2-0 again. In the here and the now, they've obviously appeared to have found something. They're starting the game smaller, and Ty Lue and their staff has obviously, from an adjustment standpoint, righted some of the stuff that was tripping them up in the first couple of games. And just in terms of the competitiveness and the way they go out there and do their thing, I thought last night was extremely impressive. Donovan Mitchell having a combined 4 points in the last two first quarters, I think has been huge because it's setting a tone where the Clippers are getting out front, and there's a dominant feeling to it. And they're able to sustain that and even this thing up.
Sam Amick is a senior NBA writer for The Athletic. So, Sam, does that mean the Clippers have, in fact, figured it all out? Or do you still not trust them? And is it still a game-to-game thing with that team?
I'll probably be a game-to-game thing attitude guy up until they start getting at least closer to reaching expectations. When this team first was constructed, as you know, nobody was sitting here going, gosh, it'd be nice if they got to the second round. This is a championship approach with two guys in Kawhi and Paul George that, we're supposed to get them there. And they've obviously tinkered around the margins quite a bit, moved some characters in and out. And even last night, it's kind of wild to see, Rajon Rondo in street clothes. I think he was dealing with a knee, but still not playing a prominent part. That's a guy that a few months ago, they thought that was going to be an X factor, that he could set the table for some of the other guys that are wonderful scorers, but not the playmakers that he is. And that plan hasn't worked, but now Reggie Jackson's out there playing, the best ball of his life. So it's just, they have so much uncertainty with the role players that it's hard to sit there and say, oh, this is who they are, this is what they are, because of that variance.
We're talking to Sam Amick. Sam, the thing is, obviously, as you know, that not every 2-2 series is the same, right? So if you're Utah and you're heading back playing without Mike Conley Jr., are you pleased to be tied 2-2 heading back to Salt Lake City? What do you think the vibe is like there and the mindset for them?
Probably not, because I get the idea that, all right, we took care of home floor and we're still even. The thing that I think in general has got them, I'm kind of, speculating, but down in the dumps a bit at the moment is that, who knows if I'm wrong, but I don't get the sense that Mike Conley's, I think it's a fairly serious hamstring strain. And not having Mike, as we've seen the last two games, is a major factor. And I feel like Donovan, in the wake of him missing so much time with that ankle injury going into the playoffs, missing game one against Memphis, he had a superhero quality to him for darn near six games when they went 6-0 with him once he got back. But you're starting, I think, to see some of the fatigue. The playoffs is a long haul, and he's not out there doing it by himself, but, he's not getting the kind of help that they wanted to give him when Mike Conley was part of the program. And add on to that the fact that the ankle has been an issue, here and there during these games, that would worry me if I was the Jazz. And with the momentum the Clippers have, and at least with their core having seemingly figured out what they need to do, I think they're in a tough spot, and I didn't think that a few days ago, but right now, it just wouldn't shock me at all to see the Clippers finish this thing off like they did the last series.
Sam Amick is joining us. You know, Sam, I'm not going to take anything away from anybody who does survive this war of attrition and finish it off and win. But when I think back on this postseason, I think in ensuing years, I'm going to think about it being a postseason of guys in street clothes. You talk, for instance, 100%. About Brooklyn, right? Reports this morning indicate that James Harden is going to test out his hamstring before tonight's game. Like, he was out. He was upgraded to doubtful. Where do you think that stands? I mean, does that seem realistic to you that he could give it a go? And if so, how effective do you think he could be?
I would be incredibly wary. I mean, you know, okay, he might get out there. But we've seen before, first of all, that's the injury that had him on the shelf for so much time before the playoffs. And like people have pointed out, you know, we kind of got tricked into thinking that, well, the Nets, even though they had all these injury things all throughout the regular season, they were finally getting right at the first, you know, at the right time, and then they were going to be on their way. Well, there's kind of a kinetic energy component to their whole roster where they're all dealing with stuff, and they can get back on the floor for a couple of days, couple of weeks, but then something else pops up. And with James, and any person like a Mike Conley who's dealing with a hamstring, even though you look out on the floor and you see them, you don't know what version of them it is, you know, and how susceptible they are to re-injury, how slow they are from a defensive standpoint, which the Nets have improved a lot on that end of the floor in the playoffs. So even if he's out there, I think, you know, it's the kind of thing where I'd be smelling blood on the other side, and we'll see if that happens, how he looks.
Sam Amick is joining us. Sam, what about this? Like, for instance, if he can't go and if Kyrie can't go, obviously they're a very, very different team. They're not nearly the threat they might be. But then in Kevin Durant, right. I mean, if it were the start of a series and you're asking Kevin Durant to take on Milwaukee and win four times, that's not happening. But you know that he's a transcendent player, one of the best to ever do it, arguably maybe nobody better scoring the basketball. Guys like that can win a game. Guys like that can maybe even win two games. Does Durant have that in him to go superhero and maybe somehow get them through this round if he doesn't have the other two?
I think he does, and you know, and I'm not trying to go down the conspiracy theory road, but he's going to need a little help from the guys with the whistle. You know, it's going to come down to what kind of defense is PJ Tucker allowed to play against him. You know, you already saw after the last game Steve Nash doing that age-old coaching tactic of talking points in the media about the officiating and saying that some of the stuff PJ Tucker was doing wasn't even basketball. And, you know, that's obviously intended to get the attention of the league and set the tone for the next game. So if PJ is, you know, unable to do his thing and rough Kevin up the way he did and really kind of has the last couple games, then that's, I mean, then Kevin's going to destroy you. And yes, maybe he can do his thing by himself until he gets some help. But it's crazy. So many of these series, Jim, have just completely flipped. I mean, we were ready to start talking about Mike Budenholzer being in trouble and having a coaching change in Milwaukee. And, you know, and now they're on the other side of this thing. And I don't want to bet against Kevin, but if he doesn't get help at some point, I think it's going to be hard.
I think you're right. Sam Amick is joining us. All right, Sam, so let me double back. At the end of May, you and your family went to Hawaii. Now, this was a trip that had been planned back when it seemed like the NBA season was not going to start until January. But because you were all vaccinated and school was over, you decided to go ahead with it. What was the initial plan for the trip?
Good old-fashioned week in Oahu. We like to go up to the Ko'olina area on the west shore. And so just, you know, snorkeling, hiking, all of the above. And because the playoffs were going on, it was going to be mixed with me, you know, using the iPad to keep track of things and working a little bit, but not too much. But yeah, the plan did not exactly go as planned.
No, so it's a great idea, right? Good quality family time. You get outside, you go somewhere beautiful, you have your iPad, you stay plugged in. You and the family go for a hike in southeast Oahu. What happened?
So the Manawili Falls Trail, highly recommended, beautiful. We did get to the waterfall, which was incredible. On the way back, I'd say in totality, like hour and 45-ish in terms of the whole hike. And we're about 15 minutes from the trailhead, and I step on a tree root that had grown above the ground. And I have the kind of ankle sprain that I've had dozens of times in my old pickup basketball career. And so that, I mean, it was a bad sprain. It certainly, the pain was at a high level. But initially I'm thinking, all right, I've been through this a million times before. The part where it got a little scary, a little dicey, was I then proceeded to get extremely nauseous very quickly and dizzy. Thankfully, I sat down rather than forging ahead on the dicey hiking trail. But I sit down, and then it's like the movies where all of a sudden the lights go out. I'd never passed out or blacked out in my whole life. So it was a lot. I mean, I was out for like 1 to 2 minutes. Now I wake up, and the family's pretty spooked because they thought it was something more serious. And the short version of the story, Jim, is you know how this ends. I wake up, and now the balls are already in motion when it comes to the medical response. The family's called 911. They inform me that we got a bird coming. We got a helicopter on the way. And I'm sitting there going, wait a minute, guys, what are we doing here? Like, it's a sprained ankle. And I literally called 911 back to kind of, you know, plead my case and say, let me just hobble out of here and learn the hard way that they don't mess around out there. If you get hurt on their public hiking trail and they're worried about you, and they were worried mainly about the blacking out part, then they come pluck you out. So they gave me the Ethan Hunt Mission Impossible experience. They put me on a big table and literally pulled me and dangled me out of the forest for like 3 miles.
It's absolutely insane. Like, and also to that point, Sam, normally you keep it PG-13, but when you got hurt, your 14-year-old son said things got a little bit blue and that you were saying things that included the F and the B and the sh, but mostly the F's. And, you know, as a father, like I can remember when I was a kid growing up, when my dad let go with an F-bomb, I never forgot that. That made a real impression upon me. So, I mean, again, just so we're clear on this, when you came to and your wife and kids called 911 and you were airlifted out of there like Ethan Hunt, man, what was that like?
It was insane. I'm pretty shameless, Jim, but I wasn't shameless enough. I was tempted to take a video on my cell phone of the flight. But you got to imagine, I'm literally sitting there strapped into like a canvas diaper, for lack of a better way of putting it. My youngest son now likes to call me Captain Underpants. He thinks it's hilarious because of the setup that they put me in for the chopper. And the medic or the EMT guy who was helping in kind of my escort on this thing, you know, obviously a total stranger. He's now got his legs spread and we're kind of like in the weirdest, uncomfortable position possible, you know, in this getup, and they pull me up, and I am thinking to myself, like, okay, where's the pulley system to where they put me in the helicopter? And it's like, oh, no, they're just literally going to hang you probably 300 feet above the earth. So I'm sitting there thinking to myself, like, this would be unfortunate if I plummeted to my death because of a turned ankle. Thankfully, that didn't happen. They then flew, I don't know the distance, it was about 3-4 minutes, and they flew to a nearby park. And the worst, most embarrassing part was that I was hoping it would be an empty park where I could limp away in solitude. And lo and behold, we get to this park and there's a blacktop naturally. And there's like a full run of pickup basketball. And these guys stop their game and just basically look up into the sky. And it's like, you know, who's this pansy that's getting dropped in the park? It was a lot, brother.
God, that's insane, Sam. That is so much. So really quickly, like you said, in your local runs back in the day, you know, you've had sprained ankles, but you like how severe this can be. Does this mean, like, when you look at LeBron and Donovan Mitchell and what they've dealt with in terms of ankle injuries this season, do we not then underplay the severity of ankle injuries too much and not give them the respect they deserve?
Yeah, I think so for sure. It really has. I mean, I knew, you know, I've had them before, but this one was different in that regard. Like Donovan Mitchell in particular, I find myself watching him really closely now because, I mean, again, I know it's apples to oranges to compare something like this to that, but an ankle's an ankle. And as we speak, you know, I'm 9 days out, I think 9 or 10 days out from the injury. I ditched the crutches 2 days ago, and I'm getting there. But as you called, I'm in Manhattan Beach, and I was trying to make my way down this road to go check out the beautiful scenery. And I mean, I'm moving incredibly slowly. And so it's that thing where, yeah, Donovan came back, but only he, I mean, how many times does the media ask him about the ankle? And obviously he shuts it down, doesn't want to talk about it, but you know, it's more tender than he lets on. And LeBron was very similar. Like, I think if he had a healthy ankle, maybe they survive against Phoenix. I think it was that big of a factor. And I mean, so yeah, the answer to your question is we don't truly take it into account. And I mean, those are the wheels. That's the thing that is if you had to pick a body part, you know, it's hands and feet for these guys is how they get the job done.
And now Kyrie as well. He is a senior NBA writer for The Athletic. Sam, I'm very happy that, well, that wasn't your time. It's never up to any of us to decide when it's our time. Thank goodness that was not your time. Your family has a story. Your son can talk a little junk. It's all going to be good and come back. I appreciate you coming on. I'm glad that you're all right, man.
Thank you, Romy. I appreciate you, brother.
I appreciate you too, Sam. Great job. Thanks for sharing that. That's tough, man. That's scary. Really scary. Senior NBA writer for The Athletic.